What's up, guys? Z22 Sosa Wayne Chung of the Californication 2020 podcast. This is my VIP co-host, Michael Amos. We're sorry you have to meet us. And in this time, 2020, like mid-September, it's just like, you know, all this morbid news and just depressing, like people dying, yeah. You know. But you have this like situation, this memorable person, you know, that you checked up on to see if maybe COVID affecting them, and she was elderly, and you want to tell us the story?
Yeah, well, 2020, as you know, Rod Stewart tells us, mid-September is going back to school time, and I started thinking about a bunch of people I knew in college who were, you know, I've kind of lost track of them, and some of them were really old then, and one of them was, you know, this is roughly 17, 18 years ago, one of them was about 90 years old when I knew her, and she was just an unreal badass. I mean, I once was at a conference with her from like before 7 a.m. until the cocktail party ended after midnight. She was whip smart. She could. Hey, I know what you're thinking. Okay, I didn't make a play. I did make a play. I got rejected.
there you go. These are our confessions. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I'd kind of conveniently forgotten that part because we forget, you know, the parts that make us, you know, look as bad as possible in order that we can continue to cope with our own inept existence. But, you know, which Hank Moody surely will learn. So I wanted to kind of, I'd lost track of her since like 2003, and I wanted to see, you know, kind of what happened to her. And, you know, I started Googling her. I found that she is still alive.
Sick.
She is 106 years old.
Sick.
She is still alive. She is still mentally sharp, and she, in fact, still, I contacted somebody who knew her. I got her email address. I just sent her an email today. I sent it pretty late. She hasn't responded, but she said she does still. Her daughter reads her emails to her because her eyesight isn't great, but she's still sharp as ever, like shows no like real noticeable cognitive decline. And I have to say, of all the people I've known in my life, if somebody was going to make it to 106, it would have been this woman, but nonetheless, it is still... it's a big surprise, right? I mean, like, sure. You know, I don't know of any, that's the first person that I have known personally who has lived that long.
You wanted to shout her out so people can like Google her and see that you're not lying?
Wayne, you know, you were choppy that whole time. I think you just made a killer joke and I totally missed it.
You want to shout her out so the audience is curious, they could Google her to, you know,
well, I mean, first of all, I just want to say she was a really awesome person, and so I fully expect that she's already watching this podcast, because I fully expect that she has
send it to her.
She's a Californication expert. Yeah, I will send her this podcast so she can see that, you know, while I am keeping account of you know, how many boobs we've been shown on this show, I'm also shouting out you know, my old acquaintance Helen Hill. And Helen Hill is a badass.
Shout out to the Double H.
Double H, man. HMH, you know, HMH forever. And, you know, I have forgiven you for rejecting me back in 03, kind of. But, yeah, I'm glad you're still around. Glad you're still kicking. It was really awesome last night when I found this. I mean, it was really heartwarming.
Woo! All right. Let's get into a season 1, episode 3. The episode is Whore of Babylon. And oh my God, this intro was just amazing. So Hank goes through this monologue. He's ripping on the director of the movie, Crazy Little Thing Called Love, which is supposedly based on his book, God Hates Us All. And this is a monologue. Ladies and gentlemen, Todd Carr, the caramel-coated, chrome-domed auteur who took my precious little novel, wiped his ass, and transformed it into the craptastic crowd-pleaser, also known as Crazy Little Thing Called Love. And Todd's all pissed off. Todd rips on Hank for not being no Faulkner. Hank rips on Todd for being no Brett Ratner. And then he's like, oh, wait, maybe that's a compliment.
Yeah, also because Faulkner and Brett Ratner, right? Brett fucking Ratner are on the same level. Yeah. Brett Ratner really bringing us back to 2007, too, right? Because Brett Ratner is now, I mean, he's just like burying his own self, right? Like, is he even welcome anywhere?
I don't know, but I mean, I think part of the double entendre is that Brett Ratner still got paid for like quite a while. So
yeah, Yeah, no, listen, I'm not going to hate on the career of Brett Ratner. Brett Ratner obviously made it, but I'm pretty sure, you know, post Weinstein, he's fortunate not to be in jail. So, yeah, Brett, a lot of stuff out there about Brett Ratner.
So Todd just basically says, look, I heard you've been talking trash about me in the press. He's like, that's not cool. And then Hank is like, oh, I thought it was because I banged your wife in every room of your house. Whoa!
Which it appeared that he didn't even, he wasn't aware of. It seems like Hank just told him that for the first time, which is, I mean, man, you really got to hate a guy to do that, right? I mean, like, not only to sleep with his wife, but then to just straight up tell him about it in public, right in front of his face. Like, you really got to hate the guy. And I mean, all Todd really did was make, like, what Hank considered a bad movie, what some people, you know, considered a good movie, a movie that might have actually made more money because of the, you know, the kind of, you know, changing it to a Tom and Katie like love story or whatever, you know, God Hates Us All was actually about.
They fight. Todd punches Hank in the crotch. Hank right. punches Todd in the face, and then it kind of like freezes. So there's like a lot going on here.
And just... really great thing here, and this is why rewatching a show can, you know, just illuminate so many things that you missed the first time around. Do you remember how episode two started?
The dream?
So it does start with a flashback, right? The dream. But then the next thing that happens is Hank shows up at Bill's house, right? And Hank tells Bill, he asks Bill if he wants a quote-unquote cock punch, right? Mm. And then episode three starts with Hank taking a cock punch, right? Which is pretty great, right? Because Hank never actually delivered it, but then he's forced to take it. Todd must have misplaced his punch a little bit because, you know, Hank is able to recover a little bit too quickly. So obviously Todd didn't hit the right spot, because you know, if you hit the right spot, it's quite uncomfortable, and you can't really do much for a little bit. Which is why that's like one of the ultimate defensive moves, right? Is to kick a dude in the balls. So
there are a lot of things going on. The first one is kind of, you know, I didn't do the complete intro part, but Hank was saying that, you know, he was a sellout. He self admits he's a sellout to Hollywood, and, you know, Hollywood's draining his soul. And the other thing is, like, everyone thinks their contribution to something is, like, the most important part, or at least, like, overly important. And I know, because mm-hmm. screenwriting is definitely the most important part of the movie. And so, like, I don't know if this is one of the redeeming portions for Hank, because it's like, Hank wrote his book, this guy does his job of directing a movie, and there's like different skill sets in writing a book and directing a movie and writing a screenplay and like all that.
Sure. Well, and the kinds of compromises involved, that, and Hank is not a very compromising figure.
Yeah. Right?
So he's not going to, I mean, authors are often pretty bothered by the way their books get adapted to film because they're different kinds of media, right? And so, yep. And you know, I mean, listen, filmmakers also full of themselves too.
Sure.
So you have two people, you know, who, you know, really think that their vision is the best vision, and that's, you know,
and
wherever that's
not
in
tunnel
conflict,
vision.
It almost makes a lot of sense that they hate each other, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah. I mean, it's not even just like novel to movie, like even screenplay to movie, like a lot of times screenwriters are not allowed on the movie set.
Sure. Yeah, because the director will change things, right? Or the actors will change things on the fly that end up working
for the movie.
No. Yeah, exactly. Like, you can't do that. It totally changes it, because it's like, no, we're going to do it. Yeah, I get it. But I mean, I'm sure, you know, Wayne, for those of you guys who don't know, Wayne is an expert screenwriter. He is available for hire if you are interested in having him write your screenplay for him. You can just, you know, you can contact him off the podcast. But yeah, it's, you know, yeah, okay, let's continue on. Well, Book Soup, shout out to Book Soup, right? Still out, still there
soup.
In Hollywood.
Yeah.
Independent bookstores not doing super well, although maybe they're the only guys left, right? Because, I mean, Barnes & Noble is still technically left, but I'm pretty sure COVID is quickly ending Barnes & Noble, and honestly has been a real disaster for independent bookstores as well, so it's not easy.
All right, so then, you know, we get to the next scene, and we see Meredith do a soul read on Hank. You know, East Coast, Jersey, not Long Island.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Then dad, blue collar worker, chip on his shoulder. Mom encouraged Hank to chase his dreams, stayed together through the good times, the bad, had sisters, good with women, a little too good. Reads books, didn't want to die 5 miles where from he was born, so he escaped, reinvented himself as a poor man's Wayne Chung.
You mean as a rich man's Wayne Chung? Yeah, okay.
White guy. And can Ernie, which is right then, you know, then I guess Meredith soul reads Hank, so they're on the same level kind of now. And then
right, no, she played that as expertly as possible. And you know what, you know, there's a moment where Hank looks like super interested with what she's about to do, and that's because Hank knows that, like, I mean, you know, a woman's not going to put that much effort into this project of kind of like getting you back unless she's into you. And it is sort of a sad truth that you know, giving like the complete and absolute rejection that Hank gave her the first time around by just, you know, diminishing every aspect of her existence, like, not only women do this, but it is a thing where when people just, you know, like, just reject you, you are intrigued by them and attracted to them because they clearly are just showing like extreme non-neediness. Like, Hank just doesn't give a shit what you think about him, right? And that's a really attractive trait.
Except for Karen.
What?
Except for Karen.
Well, with Karen, he's needy, right? With Karen, he's not needy with anyone else, but he is needy with Karen. He also had Karen for, you know, 12 years. But yeah, I thought Meredith was great in this bar scene. It does strike me as odd that she somehow knew that she would get a chance to deliver this speech to Hank that she said she had been like working on for weeks. But at the same time, Hank constantly reruns into everyone, despite the fact that that's not all that common in LA. LA is just so big. But there's a lot of serendipity in this show.
So, I mean, one thing, Californication is obviously a true-to-life documentary, so whatever, you know, this displayed had to have happened. The other thing is, it's just very common in Santa Monica or Venice. Like, you actually do, I mean, it's usually the stationary people that run the shops, but you do see the same people or same faces.
Okay, that's interesting, because they hang out in the same kinds of spaces, and they all hang out together.
Yeah, like, I hate myself for this, but on Third Street Promenade, there's a breakfast place that, like, would open in the morning. It's one of the few places that open, and I would see, like, you know, same faces there sometimes.
Okay, well, that's fair enough. So why didn't you network with these people so that they could give you, so that they could let you, like, write for Californication? Because you could do this, Wayne, straight up.
No.
I mean, yeah, you could.
Imposter syndrome, just tripping off. I gotta earn my way. I gotta earn my stripes. But enough of that. We're moving forward with this. Anyway,
well, no, Hank, one more thing. I have to tell you, this is hilarious because I was watching it on Hulu, and it's a subtitling issue, and I have no idea why they would do this. But you know, he tells Meredith's, Meredith's boy toy, right? The guy that she was out on a date with, who I'm not sure we know that much more about him right at this point. He tells him to rock out with your cock out. And on my subtitles, for whatever reason, they decided to write that, hang out with your wang out, which I don't, you guys could check this on Hulu, right? If you're, you know, if you have Hulu, at least the first season is available, and it may be more. I know it's on Amazon, just the first season is available, but on Hulu, the first season is available as well. And has anyone ever in the history of the world said hang out with your wang out? And what would be the benefit of changing the subtitles to that? I cannot figure it out, but that actually happened. And I almost fell off my bed.
I appreciate their inclusion of, you know, Asian last names.
Yes, and Asian last names that also double with double entendre meaning, right? Nothing like that. Yeah, yeah. Maybe he just meant like go hang out with your Chinese friend, dude.
Exactly. Jeez.
Yeah, like don't hang out with this woman, which I'm about to take from you right now, bro. But I'm sure you got some kind of like Chinese friend, so go hang out with him. You know. Okay. Sure.
So Hank gets it on with Meredith, and, you know, Meredith gets up, has to go to work, and we find out she's an attorney. So that's, you know.
Yeah. And Hank says, oh, then we're both assholes then, which is a pretty amazing line. Right. Also, we got more naked Mia in this scene, which is even more awkward after the discussion we had last time. But
we didn't get to that part. Meredith assumes this was a one-night stand. Hank says, no, I'm going to take you on a proper date. And then, you know, she tempts him with the two-night stand, and Hank's like, no.
Yeah.
And, like, this is... you know, we're gonna, like, you impressed me with your, you know, your soul read on me, and
right.
So let's try to make this thing. Then Hank goes to the bathroom and takes the piss, and then, like you said, Mia's there.
No, we actually got naked Mia before that. He had a flashback to naked Mia while he was sleeping while he was sleeping with Meredith, which now we've been told that Mia's 16 and they're still showing us naked Mia, which is, like, sorry, not cool. But you know, it is what it is. But yeah, then Mia just, like, shows up in his house, right?
I didn't really understand this. Like, yeah. Mia just shows up at his house and she's like, I love this part because she's like, I'm late. And he's like, what the hell are you talking about? This is possible. We're on him. You punch me in the face. Like, there's just no way. Yep.
I've certainly never been there.
Right. Well, I love the scene because, you know, then Mia's like, I'm late for school and she needs a piece of creative writing. And Mia's just like, just give me one piece of crap that you use that, you know, is rejected, because, like, that's already going to get an A+ in, like, a normal class.
Yeah.
And yeah, just like Good Will Hunting, like, the first act got an A+ in Harvard for Matt Damon.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
See?
Yeah. I mean, that, and that's what she's going for, right? Matt Damon, you know, I don't know. He probably stole the answer, you know, from, I don't know, from when there's, like, nobody in the world who could have gotten the answer, right? But Mia, I mean, I don't know. People kind of don't like the actress that played Mia on the show, is my sense. I think Mia's a diabolical character and somewhat unrealistic, but I thought she played it super well. And she has a lot of power now over Hank, and she is the kind of person, you know, who will absolutely use this power. And there aren't, you know, a lot of this show and a lot of this episode actually was about, and, you know, maybe this is uncomfortable, but a lot of it was about women using sex to, you know, move up in positions of power. And we definitely see that in Mia, and we're going to see it later with Danny, you know, in this particular episode. She's got a lot of power here, and she played it really well. Hank is panicked. He is very worried about what can happen.
For sure. Mia makes noise, then Karen's about to bust in. Or Karen comes in, yeah, and sees...
This is some Three's Company bullshit right here, you know, and Hank is seriously like Leisure Suit Larry, man, just chasing everything. Or not Leisure Suit Larry. What's his name? Like, there's a character Larry in that show, and he's maybe one of the biggest greasy slime balls that's ever existed on television. And I mean, Hank, he goes after any woman who's in his orbit. And it sure seems like Hank is the same. And apparently they just have no boundaries whatsoever, because they all, including a 16-year-old girl, just show up at his house whenever they want. Mia doesn't seem like the type for boundaries, though, so I'm not sure you can put her in a pen.
So, yeah, Karen comes in and then sees a condom on the counter. And I had to Google what it was, because it looked like a, you know, chocolate mint in a gold wrapper. I had no idea what it was.
Yeah. Well, and you were like, Magnum? What? Huh?
Yeah, what kind of chocolate's that?
Yeah. But she took a shot at his dick size, right? Which is like, oh, man, you can't do this. Like, ladies, I mean... you just can't do this. Like, honestly, the first woman who doesn't make fun of my dick size is the woman I will marry.
For all the five viewers, you now have the key to Mike's heart.
Yeah. But seriously, look, every woman knows you can't do this. Like, even when you're in these, like, knockdown, drag-out fights, women don't resort to going that low, right? And there's almost, like, there's not even a level you can go to on a woman that he even gets there, right? Because guys are just so insecure about this that you can't do that. Karen does it kind of jokingly, so maybe it's okay, but it's really not okay, Karen. Like, you just cheated on this dude and now you're telling him why? Like, that's not cool. Yeah, I guess Bill's packing some real heat.
So yeah, Karen tells Hank to keep blogging, because that's been, you know, kind of a theme. Hank hates the blogging. Because it's Karen's like, it's what you were meant to do, right? So swallow your pride and keep the job Bill gave him.
Yeah, very, very judgmental. But yeah, that's what she says. Do you remember what else she says to him? Like, what his other alternative is?
I don't remember.
She says, what else is there for you besides drowning in a sea of pointless pussy? Karen, I don't know if you get the memo.
It's not pointless.
But It's not, that's the whole point. Like, what do you mean pointless? Like, that's the whole point. Like, why do you think somebody tries to become a famous writer? Like, that is what drives us. Like, that's it. Like, that's the whole point. So there's no way you could possibly say you're drowning and pointless. Like, that is, man, you just don't get it. Women just don't get it.
Well, I thought this was, like, why Hank hates blogging or a blog so much is, you know, I think podcasts kind of went through this too. People who are professionals, they want to think that they're like this elite echelon, and like, you know, normal people can't do this stuff.
Yeah, or, no, exactly. Blogging, anybody can start a blog, right? Anybody can start a podcast. It's pretty democratic, right? You do need some minimal stuff, right? You need, you know, to have like a computer and access, you know, to the internet and things like that. But like, it's a low standard of entry, and people who view themselves as writers, and it's also a little bit of an outdated conversation, but it still is, you know, something. I mean, look, at various times, look, people look down on screenwriting too, right? Like quote unquote writers, real writers, they think screenwriting is you know, a joke. Yeah. So there's all sorts of these, you know, various, you know, lines that people draw to say, I'm doing something real and you're not, you know, or this is authentic and that's not. And blogging somehow, according to him, is in the inauthentic category, but that is not exactly true anymore. And
I wouldn't say inauthentic. It's more just like he's of a certain echelon and just like doing something that anybody could do, even though he's paid for it. And most bloggers don't get paid for what they do. Most podcasters don't get paid for what they do.
Yeah, no, it would be, he's like embarrassed. He doesn't think he should be in the same group as we are, right? He's like, listen, I'm better than these guys. And, you know, like, don't put me into that group. It's pathetic. He feels like he's gotten his salary reduced, right? It's like he's lost his job and had to take another job to clean up. And that's embarrassing for him. And there's just a lot of bullshit ego in there. Really.
It's kind of like being a prop player. Oh, whoops.
Ooh, listen, man, that hits too close to home. But that's the thing. Like, nobody would prop unless they had to prop, right? So, like, it definitely – you basically have to have no ego. Like, props are losers, and they have to be the kind of people who, you know, are not going to view themselves in that lens. Everybody else is going to view themselves in that lens. At the same time, there's a bunch of regular poker players who come in, and they're not losers, right? And they're also going broke because that's what the game is about. So, you know, I mean, who's really the loser here?
I'm just like, you know, you can say whatever you want. When I saw the first paycheck from propping, I'm just like, why did I not do this earlier?
Yeah. Listen, I'm with you 100%. Like, I don't think there's any reason not to be a prop especially in the moment we're in. Maybe like pre-2010 it made sense, but at this point, no, it's you got to if you can. So I respect it. But yeah, and the same thing with blogging. If you can make money blogging, like, there's no reason not to do it. And this actually episode lended a lot of credence to what you said last time, which is that it seems like Bill may be being cajoled by Karen to give Hank, you know, this job out of pity.
Yeah. So Mia, like, makes a noise in the room, and Karen's about to bust in. Hank's like, no. And then somehow, like, you know, blocking. And then Karen's just like, just keep the job. And then Karen leaves. And then Hank goes in the room. No Mia. Empty drawer. Windows open. And so she just, you know. Yeah. Hashtag diabolical.
That's what she does, man. I mean, she escaped with. And his drawers, his files were, like, gone through. Right? So she clearly took something. Yeah.
Which, you know, we're not going to spoil.
I mean, Hank took something from her, and now she's taking something from him.
Oh! Anyway, Hank's in Runkle's office, and Runkle is like, keep the job!
Yeah.
Then Hank's like, I fire you, Runkle, for the 500 billionth time, and then he leaves.
Yeah, I fire you from this job where you make no money because, you know, I get no gigs, and the gigs I get I don't want to do. Everyone is really, you know, trying... I mean, everyone, whenever you don't have a job, everyone else tries to tell you, get a job, you know,
like
this stuff.
Like, it's
not easy. No, like, it's not easy. Also, like, it's not the best thing ever not to have a job. You know, like, I mean, people, I mean, it's, you know, this is not having a job and still being able to pay your bills thanks to, like, you know, getting, like, pandemic added unemployment. I mean, I've never had a better time in my whole life. Look at me. I mean, what are we doing right now, right? We're sitting around recording a podcast about a show that's 13 years old because we have the time, right? We can be creative. And granted, we might not be that talented, so this is what we have to do to as a creative outlet. But you know, other people are creative, right? And giving them free time to do things, you know, just adds to the rest of our enjoyment, because they're able to create things that make our lives better, that make our lives more entertaining, that make us laugh, things like that. So I don't know why everyone's always trying to tell you to get a job. Hank's got that movie money. I can't imagine he needs a job, right? I don't know why he's so stressed out about it. He gets, you know, but it, you know, maybe he's not. Maybe everyone else is.
I'm down with EDD. Yeah, you know me.
Oh yeah, man. EDD, thank you guys very much. You know, I guess yeah, I paid
this,
into
this
that,
emoji,
right?
This emoji.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah,
you know
yeah, yeah. Thanks, EDD. Right. Keep. Don't. I hope the Democrats don't compromise with the Republicans for a skinny bill, but nonetheless, keep the money coming, guys. Like, keep that bonus money coming. I don't want to have to get a job. You know, just like keep sending it, please. Thank you. Need the money. Thanks.
So
also, you guys, if you're enjoying this podcast, you know, Venmo, Cash App, Patreon, just send us whatever you got, right? If you guys got jobs, if you're working hard, you know, if you got inheritances that you really didn't deserve, you know, like send it to us, man. We need it.
You know, inheritance, just like, you know, leave part of us in the will, like, you know, little piece, little like 0.5%.
Oh yeah, that I would recommend, if you put us in your will, don't tell us about it ahead of time, because we're very nefarious people, but just leave us in your will as, you know, just like a little slice. Yeah, you know, like instead of giving like $10,000 to your church, right, to tell you to believe in some kind of, you know, imaginary man in the sky, right, just leave us 10K so we can make more podcasts on 13-year-old television shows.
Or 13-year-olds like shows Cuties. Anyway.
No comment on Cuties, man, really.
I don't even know what it was. I just like seeing the news, but anyway.
Yeah, QAnon, I'm sure, has a lot to say about Cuties. I'm sure they're not surprised.
So one of these days, Runkle's going to figure out that it's not only he's just like working for no money, he's actually Hank's therapist that costs zero.
Yeah. Although, you know, to be fair, Hank is kind of his therapist too. Although maybe that's not as apparent right now, but it's about to become pretty apparent. And we get it. We get some real clues of it in this episode. Charlie, he's an asshole of a boss, man.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess this is like normal people in Hollywood as agents, right? Agents kind of have this, they give off this impression. But, I mean, I don't think there's been anything up to this point that can indicate, like, I mean, what... You know, I've been reading about human behavior, and there's kind of a sad truth about human behavior, which is when people like treat us poorly, when we are suffering and we're stressed out or we're the victims of abuse from somebody else, it doesn't work for everyone, but a lot of people's brain chemistry is such that passing that abuse on to another person, right? Passing that abuse on to another person is something that actually relieves them of the stress and the kind of negative chemicals that were active in their brain as a result of feeling, you know, impotent or you know, insecure or feeling abused. You know, this is why, like, you know, the rates of like domestic violence for like police officers are something like 40%, because these are people who, when they feel, you know, like when they're feeling insecure or they're abused, they actually get rewarded for taking that abuse out on somebody else. They actually feel better. And this is a really uncomfortable truth about our brain chemistry. And I saw it in this scene. You know, I'm reading this book and I see it in this scene. Charlie has this like fight with Hank, right? And like, he's clearly, you know, as with Hank, and he totally takes it out on Danny. He just like takes all that stress and he just shoves it onto Danny. And like, what did she do? She got him like, I forget exactly
before,
what she had done.
It's Coke and got it mixed up with Diet Coke, or
yeah,
she needed Diet Coke. Before you move on, I think you just kind of explain internet comments.
It's well, the internet is an interesting thing entirely, but that definitely is. But you know, people, we actually, I mean, there's so much discussion. We could honestly do a podcast on the book Behavior by Robert Sapolsky. It's the most, I mean, it's just an incredibly interesting book, and I recommend it to anyone. But internet stuff is interesting because a lot of times you're able to dehumanize and act as if you're not talking to another person.
Yeah.
And when we feel like we're not talking to other people, a lot of stuff is in play that isn't normally in play. And it, there's a really interesting thing, which is people assume that everyone would make better decisions if they were only using cognition and the kind of emotional part of their brain was left out of it. And that is true in some cases, right? As poker players, certainly we know that's the case, right? Emotion can often be an enemy of making decisions, but it's not at all entirely true. And in fact, there are many times if you're like, so what happens when people think they're dealing with computers is they take emotion out of their situation, or when they think they're dealing with non-humans, they'll take emotion out because the social aspect isn't there for them. And then there's a whole range of behaviors that alters as a result, some of them good, but some of them not good. And so that's kind of an interesting thing. But yeah, internet discussions are rough. But sorry, back to Californication. Yeah.
Yeah, so Runkle's assistant, who is Danica, which is short for Danny California, one of the RHP songs, but
Yeah,
not Chili Peppers.
they actually got sued for that.
Sure.
Yeah.
And then she brings the wrong Coke. She was supposed to bring Diet, I guess, and she brought normal. Runkle fires her because he's pissed. And as you said, it's like, because Hank ripped on Runkle. Now Runkle's got to rip on somebody else.
To be fair, anybody who drinks Coke, if somebody gives you a Diet Coke, that's pretty terrible. But there's no reason to rip on people like that. But I guess the standards for like an assistant of an agent are really high. Like you
Sure.
have to be on the ball. You need to know what a macchiato is, whatnot. So,
Shots and macchiatos. And then Hank is out with Meredith now, who
yeah.
admits the date she was on was actually a married guy she's been banging for 5 years. But Meredith actually loves him and he loves her. They love each other.
Yeah, because Meredith is really attracted to unattainable guys, right? She's attracted to this guy who's married. She's attracted to Hank because he rips her apart and he doesn't respect her and he doesn't really care about her. So that really gets her going. I mean, that's a thing. That's who she wants. But this scene is this is the best part of Hank right here.
So apparently this husband dude's like richer than God, doesn't want to cut it in half, so that's why, whatever the reason that Meredith is not with him, that
Sure.
he, sure, yeah.
Yeah, and Hank calls her out for this, right? Because oftentimes friends and people who are outside of things can see things more clearly. Hank knows if a guy hasn't left his wife in 5 years, he's not leaving her for you, right? He
Right.
knows. And then he says, I think you deserve a hell of a lot more, which is, I mean, doesn't everyone, man? It's true. It's true.
There's definitely like cognitive bias, especially when you hear the story, you're only hearing like one side. Then when you hear, two sides, one of somebody that Mike and I used to work with, we're also friends with the ex. And when we hear, oh, whoops, this is on air. Just kidding, guys.
Hold on, I'm actually not sure who you're talking about, but you'll have to tell me off camera.
Okay, well, we'll talk off camera. But basically, when you hear one side, you know one thing, you hear the other one, you're like, you hear one side, you're like, aw. Then you hear the other one, you're like, aw. Then you hear them together, you're like, oh.
Sure. I
Woo!
mean
Too real.
that happens all the time. People are, you can have two good people and they just don't work out or whatever in a relationship. But yeah, this guy is not. But she's got so much emotion tied into this guy, right? She loves this guy that's married. Hank doesn't have any of that emotion, so he's able to see a situation more clearly. And that's how most people see things. Like most people from the outside are actually able to see when people are in terrible relationships,
Sure.
but the people inside them aren't always able to see that. And yeah, I can think of tons of examples, although I don't know specifically who you're talking about. So, all right.
Maybe I just made it up then. Anyway,
Yeah.
Meredith actually tells this like sob story because like this dude that's richer than God gets her a
Oh.
puppy. Uh-oh, you the O face. Gets her a
I might.
puppy. Then the
Which
what?
actually, Runkle has no face in this episode, but yeah, I think I just figured out who you were talking about. But anyways, keep going on. Yeah,
Whoops. Anyway.
the puppy.
Puppy, yeah, puppy. So this is the cutest puppy, and the puppy has a cat name. And then when the wife is away, Meredith goes over with the puppy to, be with the husband. But the wife comes back early, and then Meredith has to just like bolt really quickly, and then forgets the dog there.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, that stinks, man. That stinks. You don't want to lose Cat Stevens, man. You got to keep in touch with Cat Stevens.
shout out to
So,
Cat Stevens. Shout out to
yeah.
Stevens.
Yusuf Islam.
So Hank's like, come on, we're gonna take care of the situation.
Yeah, but this is the best part, because he just, he like, look at what he does here. It's a completely preposterous thing to do. He just breaks into someone's house, right, and goes and like, you know, goes to get their dog. But this is the best part about Hank, because he does have a real deep sense of injustice, right? And when he tells, when he tells Meredith, I think you deserve a hell of a lot more, he's totally serious, right? And this is a big reason why people like Hank. And then another thing he's willing to do is he is willing to act, right? He sees this injustice happening, and he's like, this isn't going to continue. Like, I'm going to go fix this problem right now. Damn the consequences, right? And so he does it.
So next scene is Runkle. He gets an email from his secretary, Danica. She says she's sorry and has a bunch of pics of her. I forgot the website name.
I don't remember the website, but she's clearly into like some dom sub relationships, and she's, you know, BDSM, and she's definitely a sub, right? Because she wants to be submissive to Charlie, and you know, subs often want to put themselves in the position of like servants and things like that, and that's clearly what gets her off here.
Speaking of subs, smash that like button and hit subscribe.
Yeah, go ahead and hit subscribe, and also if you know, Subway, if you're out there and you want to sponsor the show, like, we'd be happy, right?
I literally just had Subway today. So.
Yeah, while talking about Mia and Californication in honor of Jared Fogle, Wayne went and had Subway, and Yeah, well, that just ruined our Subway. Our Subway. Yeah, there's no way Subway's gonna sponsor us now.
Damn it, we were so close.
Oh man. Oh, and you even held up the Subway too. It was like perfect. And then I had to ruin it, man. I'm not sure who ruined Subway more, me in that moment or Jared Fogle.
Or me, I just sold myself short. I'm just like, hey, I was gonna sponsor you anyway, or I was gonna shout out Subway anyway, so there's just no chance that was gonna happen. Like, I just like dropped the ball. You have to play hard to get. You be like, I have more value than you. Like, I deserve stuff. I deserve some sandwiches, but yeah. I just showed that I was gonna buy that anyway.
Well, I mean, unfortunately, they're probably a little bit too scared to pick another spokesman after what happened the first time around. So.
Danica has like all these pictures, you know, with the dom stuff, and then Runkle's like, oh, I have to stare at these pictures while having my hands under my desk.
Yeah.
And all this time his phone's ringing, and like, I don't know why he doesn't pick up the phone. Like, you know, you just have your hands under your desk, right?
Well, I mean, you can't be, hello? Hello? You can't pick up the phone like that, right?
So then I guess Runkle maybe was distracted with something and then picks up the phone and it's Marcy and says, like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. I thought he did a great job, right? I mean, he's like, his O face in the scene is pretty good. I mean, respect. Yeah. No, real respect to Charlie. Evan Handler is very good at masturbating.
Then Hank sneaks into Meredith's, you know, husband's banging this woman. We don't even know if it's the wife. I mean, it's just they're married. It's not so clear. like wife of at least 5 years, right? Because Meredith and him move on and off, and they're banging. Just like, sounds like another.
No, we don't know who it is. This guy's a total dog. We don't know what he's on about. you know what I liked? I really think they could have done this in the show, but they may not have even had the writing done. And this is a little bit of a spoiler, but in season two, there is a TV chef who becomes a character in the show. She has a TV cooking show. And at the very beginning of this episode, at the very beginning of the scene where he goes into the house, there's just a cooking show playing on the TV. And they really should have had Chloe Metz on the cooking show in this episode. And then she would have showed up in the next season. And then when you did the rewatch, you could have noticed that. And when you notice stuff like that in rewatches, it's incredible.
Yeah, you can't. It's really hard to pull.
It's really hard because you have to plan so much stuff out ahead of time, right? And you don't even know. Like a show like this, right, is like, I mean, honestly, not that likely to make it. Most shows aren't that likely to make it. So planning stuff like that out is you have to have like a 5-season contract like off the bat, and that's, these things are really rare. So,
So Hank, social justice puppy thief, steals the puppy, this cute little thing, and then he sees a piece of art that I drew that.
Yeah.
He steals as well.
Well, it was the same one that he vomited on, right?
Yeah, that I drew.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I assume you have more than one painting, right? Yeah. But But yeah, it looked the same. Maybe it wasn't exactly the same one. Maybe it was part of a series or whatever. But yeah, so he goes back in and takes that, which more power to him. He's now committing like a felonious burglary. But hey, good for him. Yeah.
He's doing it to make things right again. So, it's
That's
hard to
yeah, that's the whole thing, right? Doing bad things to make everything right again. That's the theme of the show.
So then back to Runkle, the secretary. Danica is about to leave. Runkle is like, hey, you don't have to quit. You don't have to quit. And then she's like, really? And she's like, do you want your job back? He's like, yeah, I'd like my job back. And you're the boss, so you can discipline me. And by the way, Hank doesn't fire you either. So, there you go.
And this is clearly what gets her off. That's what she's up to here. Runkle can't really believe what's fallen into his lap here, right? I mean, he just, the look on his face, he just can't believe it. I mean, look, Runkle is not a particularly attractive guy, so this is not stuff that happens for him all the time. There's a lot of like these kind of like power positions, right? For men fantasize often about being in power positions and having their subordinates into them, right? To not be too vulgar. And women too will fantasize about these spots, but certainly you can look at all the teacher student like father daughter type stuff on Pornhub and things like that, stuff that like doesn't really happen to normal guys in real life, but probably happens to Hank Moody's. But yeah, all this stuff like Runkle's, he's a married man, right? This stuff never happens if you're not attached, by the way. It on This stuff only ever happens when you have somebody at home. If you don't have anybody at home and you're a guy, nobody's interested in you. So
Unless you're Hank Moody. Anyway. But
yeah, hey, look,
he's
Hank.
attached at the heart.
The thing is, they can tell that Hank Moody just has, people, has hoes in every area code. So they can tell, like they have this sense, right? And they know like a loser guy is a loser guy, right? And they know like Hank Moody is Hank Moody, and that's just how it is.
Least in the 310, 323, and 424. And
Yeah,
66.
seven one
Maybe
four,
not 6. Well,
five six
7-1-4.
two,
Yeah,
five six
562.
two,
Yeah.
yeah.
Anyway, the next thing that happens is scene switch. The dog wakes up Hank. Meredith's about to go to work. And I guess they're dating officially? I don't know. And
Whoever knows.
exactly. Whoever knows. And then Hank, Meredith drops the truth bomb. Hank stole the wrong dog.
Yeah. Well, that's a disaster because now Meredith's not going to take it, right? So now he's stuck taking care of this dog. And the dog is, I mean, the dog's like a, is it a pug or a French bulldog? I guess maybe it's a French bulldog.
I don't
Either
know.
way, right? I mean, those are have got to be the two most overrated dog breeds on the planet. Like French bulldogs cost like thousands of dollars, and they're just like trash dogs compared to their English counterparts. And so I don't know why anyone would buy these. And both of those dogs, right, when they breathe, they sound like they're in a like in a the kind of place where the air quality is terrible because of fires. They can barely breathe. It's like, I mean, intolerable dogs, right? But it seems like every young girl loves these dogs. I don't know what it is. They're pretty easy dogs to take care of. I guess they're pretty easygoing, and they're incredibly lazy. They have very little energy. They can hardly do things, so they'll sit around with you on the couch like all day, every day. They die when they're like 8 years old because they can barely breathe, but whatever.
Definitely not getting one then.
No, terrible, terrible dogs. Don't get a French bulldog. Don't get a pug. Not only are they terrible dogs, but for all you French bulldog owners out there, you're terrible people. Get a real dog.
That's cold, man. That's cold.
One goal I have here is, I want people to know my views, right, with this podcast. And
Sure.
there's a lot of people, I'm just a really judgmental person. I'm not Hank Moody. Hank Moody is really not super judgmental. I am judgmental. If you have French bulldog, I don't want to talk to you, right? Just cancel, unsubscribe. I don't care. I don't even care.
Don't say that.
No, wait, hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on. Don't unsubscribe, right? Hold on. I'm sorry. I'm having a bad day, okay? People,
Taken out of
listen,
the
dogs are
audience.
great. Dogs are great. All dogs are great. I love you. All people are great. Do not unsubscribe, and send, Venmo.
So next scene, the secretary Danica brings Runkle the wrong coffee on purpose. So. It's time to
That's not a
disappear.
macchiato. Like, oh no, what a terrible assistant you have.
And then
what is a
like,
macchiato?
I don't know. It's just
Yeah, come on, you know all this stuff, man. You drink garbage, drink some Starbucks.
I'm drinking coffee black, okay?
Yeah, but that's because you're lazy at your own house. You don't drink that crap when you're out and about.
Yeah, I do. I drink iced Americanos.
Yeah, okay, what's that?
Oh, the three iced Americano is just it's just
You drink some like weird pink drink that has like, you know, some kind of sloppy stuff in it. No? Like
the dragon drink?
Yeah, like dragon, whatever, dragon fruit stuff, man. I mean,
I just,
like,
yeah.
How much money a day do you spend at Starbucks? Just checking. When you're playing poker? 20?
Anyway, the second Danica.
First world privileges, man. We spend more money than, you know.
How bad do I run compared to everybody else, okay?
Yeah,
how
no
about
doubt.
That? Yeah, so.
Yeah, people in the worst neighborhoods in Mumbai don't make $20 in a year. And Wayne spends, you know, $20 on dragon fruit drinks
I
a
hate
day.
You.
Wayne,
I hate
you're you know, you're very privileged and you're a very thoughtless American. All right.
I do acknowledge the privilege.
Yeah. In the same way the rest of us acknowledge it. Well, what can you do?
Yeah. Make Californication podcasts.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, some people get to make Californication podcasts. Some people have to do without sanitary napkins. Okay, moving on.
So then Danica said, make sure she gets punished, knocks over the coffee off the desk and it shatters on the floor. And
which
then
actually is deserving a punishment. I mean, that's not okay.
Not okay.
But no.
The secretary bends over and Runkle goes, whoosh, which is probably, if this show was released today, not so good.
Yeah. Well,
Borderline.
It's tough. I mean, it's tough. It is on Showtime. But, yeah, I mean, listen. I took that as a, I took that as an acceptable slap because I didn't take it as a slap of, you know, violence and punishment. Yeah, I took it as it seems as if they're, well, okay. Let me say this. It's obviously not acceptable, just to be clear, because this is a job-related power thing, and this kind of relationship is just not okay in this spot.
Yeah.
But they, I took it as like a consenting slap in this case. This stuff can be difficult and uncomfortable, but yeah, the power dynamics and the job part of it obviously makes it not okay. But I don't think he was, you know, I mean, the slap is part of their dom sub arrangement that they have going on at this point. So, yeah.
So, we're at Bill's place now. Hank sneaks in the painting, then surprises Karen with his hands over his eyes. This is just like beyond inappropriate for like these episodes or whatever, especially for exes.
Yeah, no, totally. They were super cute and flirty and handsy and inappropriate. They have a ton of chemistry and like Karen's like smiling and stuff like that and like is ha-haing on the joke. But yeah, no, not okay.
Not
right?
Okay.
Not okay.
And they've slept together too. And, oh.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's, well, you know, I gotta say, like, you know, Bill takes so much slack from the show, but Bill is like, man, he lets a lot of stuff just like roll off his back, man. Just like he's pretty chill, you know. Like I could see why somebody could like Bill, cause like he's rich. Oh, and he's chill, you know. Like, and that's a really good quality. So I don't know.
Shout out to Andrew Nemi. I love him. He's so chill. Anyway, Hank's about to kiss Karen, then Bill walks in.
Yeah.
And Becca walks in.
Yeah.
And Becca's like, or yeah, and Hank's like, puppy. And then Becca's like, oh, you're the best. I forgive you for everything. I love you forever. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then Mia walks in.
Listen, Mia walking in just destroys every scene. I mean, not in a bad way necessarily, but it just adds a level of discomfort. Like there's just, I mean, Mia is a, I don't know. You know, it's like the, I don't know, man. It's like that. I don't know what I was trying to figure out exactly what the, you know, the Whore of Babylon title was, which I honestly didn't realize the title until you mentioned it at the beginning. I would have thought about this beforehand, but like the Whore of Babylon is like really associated with evil in the Bible. So who's the Whore of Babylon? It's
I don't even know the story, so.
Yeah, well, I'm not totally sure of the story either, right? But, like, basically, you know, Babylon is, like, supposedly this place that it's held in the Bible as this place that, like, persecuted Christians, right? That's how people in the Bible see it a lot. And so it's held as this place in the, like, according to biblical scholars, as like Babylon is this place of like great evil, you know. And
like the
so
poker room?
What,
like the poker room? Oh, just kidding, go ahead.
Yeah, no, so like the Whore of Babylon is actually, it's actually like a place, right? Mm-hmm. it's not like a person, like that's like the name, that's like what they call the city. And so, but it's really, it's like evil. And I don't know, you know, I guess, is that the place that he's in? I'm not sure what to do with the symbolism of the title.
It might be the place of
Los Angeles, maybe. Honestly, Los Angeles might be the Whore of Babylon, seriously.
Sure. The way that the show is written, it's probably in reference
to the city. Yeah, that's probably it. Yeah.
But, like, out of all the episodes, this is one of the ones where I feel like, you know, Hank's heart might be misplaced. In some regards,
sure.
Whereas, like, you know, like I usually like and agree with the direction of Hank's morality, but this is just like, you know.
Well, the breaking into somebody's house and stealing a dog and a painting is clearly beyond the pale, you know. And it's not this guy's, like, it's really not this guy's wife's fault, right? Like,
yeah.
The guy is the loser. This is now her dog too, right? She doesn't deserve to lose her dog. Like, she's got a, you know, philandering husband. And, you know, of course, he could have taken the dog as an opportunity to be honest and say, you know, listen, this is what I've been up to, right? And dealing with the consequences, as he should have done, but he didn't, right? And it's not her fault. She thinks she's been gifted a dog, and it's a really uncomfortable situation. So, I mean, but anyways, Hank takes it upon himself, and I understand. Honestly, his morality might be a problem, but he actually is pretty awesome in these spots. Where he's just like Hank is a guy you want to roll with if shit goes down, yeah. Really. Cause like, you know, Hank, like if shit goes down, Hank is going to scrap with you in the street, right? Like that, you know that. And he's like a guy, Hank is definitely going to have your back. Like he is not going to leave you hanging at all. And I appreciate that. Hank really has, you know, he's a troubled figure, but he has the back of, yeah, I mean, he has the back of pretty much everyone around him. You know, he sometimes isn't able to support people in the way that they need to be supported because of his own personality flaws. But like he tries, he really does. He's got your back. And if you're one of his people, if you're not one of his people, you know, like Todd or Bill, you Uh-oh. Know, then he doesn't have your back at all. But yeah.
Oh, well. So when Mia walks in, Bill's like, my daughter Mia, she's a genius, wrote this book. And then we know this book is actually.
Well, actually, it's a short story, right? It's a short story this time. Yeah. Yeah. And he says the writing's a little bit purple, right?
And I don't even know that. What, like, does it mean?
I can only get it by context, right? I assume it just means, I took it as maybe like a little bit green, maybe a little bit purple, meaning like if you think about like something not being totally ripe yet or something, that's what I took it as, but I don't really know what it means.
I don't know.
Yeah.
And Bill asks about the blog, and we get a little piece of Hank's next blog, which is basically Becca is not always going to say she loves him no matter what. But at this age, at least, you know, the puppies, kids, unconditional love.
Yeah, no, that's a nice thing, man, for sure.
Yeah. That tails up. So I think I missed the part when after the Hank gets in the fight, Bill was the one that bails him out.
Oh yeah, Bill. Yeah, Bill bailed him out way back in the day. There was some really uncomfortable, you know, kind of like homophobic humor in that moment. You know, stuff that I think it's actually really nice that stuff is just not going to be written anymore. I mean, you could still certainly write it because, you know, it certainly was a reality of, you know, a long period of our lives. And frankly, at the casino still is, right? Because people have not, you know, really adjusted to the modern world, or a whole lot of people are resistant to adjusting to that and think it's like, you know, PC culture or whatever, but it's a lot better than it used to be for sure. And, but yeah, there's definitely some stuff going on there. But yeah, Bill bailed him out, right? Bill, I think I don't know. Bill's not a bad guy. He's really not a bad guy.
Yeah. You know? I think he's also just, I think we said this like last episode too, just like he's trying to wrap up the loose ends so Hank can move on and then they can move on, because as long as there's just like, you know, things that are incomplete.
There was a line there where Bill slammed Hank. He said something like, "The woman you didn't want to marry."
Yeah, right. That's why it was important I missed that. Yeah, my bad.
Well, I know this is like the conceit of one of the big conceits of the show, that like, well, you know, Karen, like, you know, the reason she cheated was because like Hank didn't want to marry, didn't want to commit. They had been together for like 12 years. I mean, like when Hank I'm totally with Hank when he tells Karen, like, you know, they had that conversation like the last episode where he was like, "Look, we were basically married. Like we weren't married, but it was basically like the same thing." Like that is totally correct. I mean, you do not get to play that card when you've been together with somebody for a decade and be like, "Well, you just didn't want to marry me." It's like, dude, whether you guys were married officially or not, like, you were together. Like, you do not get to play that card. Like, you owe that person a conversation. If you don't want to be in this relationship anymore, like, I know this isn't ever how it plays out in real life. I know that's the case, but like, you owe, like, come on, you're married. Like, if you've been together for 12 years, you're married. And, like, you know, unless you guys have an established and known open relationship, like, y'all know you're committed. The conversation never has to take place. Like, that's how it is. So for Bill, like, so for people to keep throwing that at Hank, like, you weren't willing to get married, like, that would make sense if they were together for like 2 years. But it doesn't make sense at 12 years. Like, at 12 years, whether she's okay with it or not, like, Karen has tacitly agreed to deal with the situation as is. And they, you know, this is Hollywood, man. It's LA. Like, people don't have to get married, you know?
I don't even know the state of stuff going on. Like, you know, it's the people I know.
People still get married, but it's stupid because they end up miserable. You know, like.
Yeah, I don't want to comment on the state of like my peers, but just like, you know, it's the ratio, percentages are not 100% stay together. That's sure. All I'm gonna say.
No, although, you know, the people often quote this thing where it's like, you know, 50% of marriages end in divorce or whatever.
Yeah, skewed stat, but go ahead.
It is a skewed stat because actually, like, educated people don't get divorced at that high of a percentage. It's like, if both people have like graduated from college, it's something like 20% or something like that. So it's a lot better chance. I mean, 80% is not so bad. But then you have to ask the question about, I mean, it's still tough, right? How many of those 80% are living their best lives and things like that? And there's, you know, people, again, we've talked about this before, but people have different and often contradictory things that they want out of life. And there's some stuff that they can really only get by having a committed relationship, but then there's other stuff that you have to slice out of the things that you want in order to make that work. So everything, it's always a matter of choosing where you're going to sacrifice and what you're going to give up.
The other thing about the skewed stat is, like, they count like multiple divorces. If one person gets multiple divorces,
I see,
then it counts and towards that.
Yeah.
50% sounds like,
well, it's unfortunately true, but, you know, people who are, you know, serial divorcers, they're going to skew that stat a lot, because look, there are certain people out there who are not really capable of committing to other people, and nonetheless they just keep getting married over and over and over again. I don't really understand this phenomenon particularly, but it's I'm not a relationship therapist. I don't really understand how these things happen, but there are people who just really shouldn't be in committed relationships at all, and they keep getting in them, and there's like, they're inevitably going to get divorced because they're people who have needs that can't be met. To put it as lightly as possible, their needs cannot be met by one person.
And I didn't want to snub like my network. It's just like, a lot of times I know both parties and they're both fine people. Like, I think that a lot of times, like, they may not know each other, or, you know, they may feel like time invested, or just like they don't know themselves, got together, and then and just like, where, you know, people change, the phases of their life changes, and it's definitely a very hard equation. A lot of times, like, some people get into relationships at the convenience of like proximity, which is just like, it's really hard and sounds like preachy-ish and lecture-ish, but it's like, the, you know, your proximity isn't necessarily the best, you know, gonna have the best person.
No, I totally agree. And I think there's, look, it does seem to me like maybe like the people who have really, really good marriages, really, really good long-term relationships have reached this kind of level of life that maybe the rest of us can't have. But I also do think there's like this people just really feel pushed into it even still today.
Yeah,
and there's this kind of misnomer that that's how you really connect with another person. I mean, that's not necessarily true. Like, you can connect with other people outside of it. Like, you know, for example, you and I are bromosexuals, right? Like, we just have this platonic, you know, male relationship. That is just, I mean, this is honestly the deepest relationship I've ever had. So, you know, I mean, you don't need to, you know.
To all the women you had relationships with, he doesn't mean it. This is why this is on a comedy channel. The relationship, the relationship that you had with that woman was the deepest one. It's just it's too painful for you to recall again. So, you know.
Wayne, man, listen, I really appreciate what you did right there because you made it seem to the audience like I've ever had a relationship with a woman. And so I appreciate that, right? Because they're not even going to question that. And so that's, you know, and like, look, you need a little bit of cred, right? So I appreciate that, man. Thanks.
Yeah. All right. Any parting words of wisdom for our loyal audience of hopefully six now?
No, no super words of wisdom. I don't think this was the most interesting episode. So I'm not sure how long we went, but it wouldn't surprise me if we went shorter than the other. Have we gone shorter than the other
episode? Yeah, a little short. But like the intro to this episode was definitely one of the better ones.
Yeah, maybe we should just make a podcast where you just talk about like how awesome we are. Like, do you think like the awesomeness podcast would work if we were just like
doing this? Is awesome. Already arrogant that anybody wants to listen to us. I think this is like already good.
Oh, don't worry, Wayne. I don't think anybody actually wants to listen to us. So that level of arrogance is not something that I.
How many
I
clicks? Make jokes. How many clicks did you get your network to get? How many thumbs did you say? Just like just
zero.
Watching, yeah, zero.
I have no network.
How are people finding this then? Because there's definitely like a couple of views.
I have no idea, but more power to them. Thank you guys.
Hopefully they think it's because you're really good looking. So we're gonna put your email down below and then send your picture. And if good match, then you know.
Yeah. No, I mean, you guys could just go on Tinder. Okay, I've got a couple of accounts on Tinder. They both say that my age is about 10 years younger than it actually is. Hmm. So you guys can look for that. It's I've got an account on Grindr, so you can look me up there as well, for all the guys out there.
What about your OnlyFans page?
What? Yeah, well, my OnlyFans. I haven't actually started OnlyFans page. How much money do you think people will pay to see me naked? I think a lot, right?
Depends how many priests.
Yeah. But priests don't have any money. It's a bad market.
That is not true.
Like, is there a market for hemorrhoids out there? No. Okay. So yeah, I'm not gonna be able to start OnlyFans. I think I've got too many red flags. But it is. I do appreciate the idea.
We're always
anyways,
gonna
guys. Don't.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Don't spend your money on OnlyFans. Okay. Just hit the subscribe button. Hit the thumbs up button. And just like, seriously, man. Like, I was just making a joke about the EDD. Like, I'm really struggling. You know, and Wayne's really struggling. And at this point, I'm down to ramen. Right. And
you can afford ramen.
There you go. See, I mean, think about how bad of a situation Wayne is in, right?
White privilege.
Right. Yeah. Thanks, man. No, only in the USA can white people eat all the ramen you want. So right. Wayne is really hurting and he doesn't know what to do. And the only thing he knows to do is to just get out here and try to entertain you. And so you guys have any human feelings whatsoever, right? And you're sitting here looking at it, and I'm looking across. I'm looking at the camera. I'm looking at Wayne right now, right? This is just pathetic what I'm looking at. Okay. So he needs,
that's what my parents
like. He needs whatever you can spare. Right. And it's just a really difficult time we're all going through. And I appreciate the times might be difficult for you guys as well. Right. But some of you guys surely have jobs and some of you guys surely have some money and some of you guys have, you know, are less, you know, aware of the pandemic. Some of you guys are pretty ignorant and maybe you're still going out there and earning money or maybe, you know, like stealing or whatever. But I'm not like, I'm beggars can't be choosers. I'll take whatever you got. And I will give some of it to Wayne.
Promise?
He needs the help, guys. Like, I don't know what to do if I need to get like Jerry Lewis on here or whatever. But like, this is a dire situation. I'm not going to be able to afford Hulu much longer. How can I do reviews of Californication if I can't afford Hulu?
Right? Why don't you just do that sales pitch right off the bat?
Right.
100% though,
no. No, if you guys are still with us, which is inexplicable, really. I mean, you need to take a look in the mirror. But if you're still with us, send us money. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your time. Smash that thumbs up, hit subscribe, and we will be back with season 1, episode 4 soon.